All right, so welcome back to the Deep Dive, everyone. And today we're going to tackle a really interesting case. It's a classic case in the UCC world about the sale of goods. We're going to be looking at the 1977 case of Sessa v. Regal. It's a Pennsylvania case. And what's great about this case is that even though it deals with horse trading, it really does a great job of illustrating some of the big issues that come up in the sale of goods under the UCC.
Absolutely. So, this is a great case for anyone learning about Article 2.
Yeah. And some of the things we'll be talking about today are the concept of warranties. So both express warranties and implied warranties.
Exactly.
And we'll also look at, the question of what constitutes the basis of the bargain. We'll see how those two concepts play a role in a sale. So, our big goal today is to answer this question. Did the seller's statements about the horse in this case actually create express warranties? And if so, were they breached? Or if not, were any other warranties, implied warranties, potentially breached?
Right.
So let's kind of set the stage here. Yeah.
And give everyone kind of a sense of what happened. Yeah. So this case, it involves this guy, Joseph Sessa. He's a beer distributor from Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
But he's also like a hobbyist horse racer, standardbred horse racing.
Right.
And he wanted to buy a horse, so he got in touch with this guy named Gene Regal, who's from Ohio. Mm-hmm. And Regal was acting on behalf of himself and two other people who own this horse named Tarport Conaway. So Sessa decided that he wanted to buy the horse, but before he actually bought it, he decided, I'm going to send an agent. I'm going to send this guy named Robert Maloney to go check out the horse.
Right.
So he sent him to Ohio. And, Sessa told his agent, I trust your judgment.
Yeah.
And Maloney went, looked at the horse, watched the horse being jogged, and reported back to Sessa and said, yeah, I like the horse.
Right.
And then Sessa got on the phone with Regal, and Regal made some statements about the horse. He said, it's a sound horse, it's a good one, and you'll like him.
So based on, that conversation and the report from his agent, Sessa went ahead and bought the horse. Paid $25,000 for it, which is, back in 1973, that's a lot of money.
That's a serious chunk of change.
Yeah, pretty big investment in a horse. And Regal ships the horse to Sessa in New Jersey. So horse arrives.
Yeah.
It's all good. But shortly after the horse gets there, they discover that the horse has tendonitis in both of its front legs.
Yeah, ouch.
And then even worse, like a couple days later, the horse becomes completely lame, can't walk.
Right.
Because it had a blood clot, basically, like a thrombosis of the iliac arteries.
Yeah.
So, bad news. Obviously, if you're buying a racehorse and the horse can't race, it's a big problem.
It's a big problem.
So, Sessa gets in touch with Regal and says, hey, come on, take back this horse, give me my money back. But Regal refuses.
Yeah.
And so, Sessa's left with this horse and sues Regal.
Right.
And so, that's how we end up in court. And the big question, or one of the big questions in this case is, did Regal's statements about the horse, calling it sound, calling it a good one, saying you'll like him, did those statements create any warranties?
Right.
And then, if so, did he breach them? So let's start with the idea of an express warranty. Can you kind of just break down for us what that is under the UCC?
Yeah, absolutely. So the concept of an express warranty is actually defined in the UCC itself. Mm-hmm. So if you look at UCC section 2.3.13, it lays out what an express warranty is. Basically says it's an affirmation of fact or promise that's made by the seller to the buyer about the goods.
Okay.
And it becomes part of the basis of the bargain.
Okay.
It can also be a description of the goods or a sample or a model. But the key point is that it has to be something that becomes part of the basis of the bargain. In other words, the buyer has to rely on that statement in order to be induced into the contract.
Okay. So it's got to be something that the buyer's relying on.
In order to make that purchase.
Right. And it can't just be the seller's opinion. It has to be something more than that.
Okay.
It has to be something that's factual.
Okay. So how did the court analyze those statements that Regal made? The horse is sound. It's a good one. You'll like him.
Yeah. So in this case, the court, they really scrutinized those statements. And they basically came to the conclusion that, those statements were actually not express warranties.
Okay. Why not?
They said that those statements were, more like opinions or commendations, like kind of puffery.
Okay.
That sales talk.
Right.
Kind of vague, not really specific enough to be considered like a factual guarantee. And they pointed to a couple things. They said, first of all, the statements were made in this phone call. And the phone call was, they described it as largely collateral to the sale.
Okay.
In other words, it wasn't like the main event. It was kind of a side conversation.
Oh, interesting. Okay. And they characterized the statements as, you know, fairly bland statements.
Okay.
Like they weren't super specific.
Yeah.
So for example, you know, saying it's a good one, well, that's pretty subjective.
Right, right.
I like him. Again, super subjective.
Right.
And even the statement sound, they said, you know, in the context of a horse sale where the buyer had actually sent his own agent
right.
to go check out the horse, that statement sound, it's not really like a guarantee.
Okay.
It's more like a general statement of praise.
Okay, so it's not really a promise that there's nothing wrong with the horse. It's just a more general positive statement about the horse.
Right, right.
Okay, and you mentioned earlier this idea of the basis of the bargain.
Yep.
Can you explain what that means in this context and how that played a role in the court's decision?
Yeah, so basis of the bargain is it's a very important concept under the UCC.
Mm.
And it basically means that the buyer relied on the seller's statement when deciding to buy the goods.
Huh.
So it's what induced them into the contract.
Okay.
And in this case, the court said, you know, when we look at the totality of the circumstances here, it doesn't seem like Sessa was really relying on Riegel's statements.
Okay.
When he decided to buy this horse.
Okay.
Because remember, he sent his own agent.
Right.
To go inspect the horse.
Yeah.
And he even told his agent, I trust your judgment.
Right.
And that agent came back and said, yep, I like the horse.
Right.
So to the court, it seemed like Sessa was really basing his decision on his own agent's inspection.
Okay.
More than anything that Riegel said.
Okay. So the court is saying it's more than just saying words. It's about whether the buyer actually based their decision on those words.
Yeah.
And here it seemed like Sessa was really basing his decision on his agent's opinion.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
So because of that, they said, you know what? It doesn't seem like Riegel's statements were really part of the basis of the bargain.
Okay.
And so no express warranty was created.
All right. So that covers express warranties. But you mentioned earlier, there are also these things called implied warranties.
Mm-hmm.
So even if a seller doesn't make explicit promises about the goods, there might still be some guarantees that are implied by law. So let's talk about those. What are the main types of implied warranties that we need to consider in this case?
Okay, so there's two main types of implied warranties that we see come up a lot in sales contracts. One is the implied warranty of merchantability, and the other is the implied warranty of fitness for a particular purpose.
Okay, so let's start with merchantability. What is that, and how did the court handle that issue in this case?
Okay, so the implied warranty of merchantability basically says that the goods being sold are fit for the ordinary purposes for which those goods are used.
Okay.
So if you buy a toaster, it should make toast.
Right.
If you buy a car, it should drive.
Right.
And in this case, you know, if you buy a racehorse, it should be able to race.
Okay.
Right. Now, what's interesting about this case is that the court actually found that the horse was merchantable.
Oh, really?
Even though it had tendonitis and a blood clot.
Okay, I'm a little confused. How could it be merchantable if it had those problems?
Yeah, so that's a really important point. And this is something that a lot of people get wrong about the implied warranty of merchantability.
Okay.
They think that if the goods have any defect at all,
right,
then they're automatically not merchantable.
Okay.
But that's not actually true. What the court emphasized in this case is that the horse actually did have a racing record.
Oh, okay.
Before the sale.
Yeah.
And it even raced after the sale.
Oh, okay.
So the court said, look, you know, the goods don't have to be perfect.
Right.
They don't have to be the best quality in order to be merchantable.
Okay.
They just have to be a fair average quality.
Okay.
And they had to be fit for their ordinary purpose.
Okay.
And in this case, the horse, despite the tendonitis and the blood clot, was still able to race.
Right.
So the court said, you know what? It's merchantable.
Okay, so just because a horse, or really any product, has a defect, doesn't mean it's automatically not merchantable. It just has to be good enough for its ordinary use. And that's a question right. of fact for the court to decide.
Exactly, exactly.
Okay, so let's move on to the other type of implied warranty, fitness for a particular purpose. When does that come into play, and why didn't it apply in this case?
Okay, so the implied warranty of fitness for a particular purpose, it's a little different from merchantability.
Okay.
It applies when the seller knows mm-hmm. that the buyer is buying the goods for a particular purpose.
Okay.
And the buyer is relying on the seller's skill or judgment to select or furnish suitable goods for that purpose.
Okay.
So, for example, let's say you go to a hardware store and you need to buy some screws.
Right.
And you tell the salesperson, hey, I need screws that can hold up this heavy shelf I'm putting in my garage.
Right.
And the salesperson says, okay, I've got just the thing. And they sell you some screws. And then you go home, you put up your shelf,
Yeah.
put all your heavy tools on it, and the shelf collapses.
Right.
Because the screws weren't strong enough.
Okay.
In that case, you might have a claim for breach of the implied warranty of fitness for a particular purpose.
Okay.
Because you told the seller what you needed the screws for,
Right.
and you relied on their expertise to select the right screws.
Gotcha. So in this case with the horse, why didn't that apply?
Well, even though Regal knew that Sessa was buying the horse to race it,
Okay.
the court said there wasn't enough evidence to show that Sessa was relying on Regal's skill or judgment
Right.
to select a suitable horse.
Right, because Sessa had sent his own agent to check out the horse.
Exactly.
Okay, so the concept of reliance is important here too. But it's a little different than with express warranties. With an express warranty, it's about whether the buyer relied on a specific statement made by the seller. But with fitness for a particular purpose, it's about whether the buyer relied on the seller's expertise to select the right goods for the job.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, great.
Yeah.
Now, there's one more thing that I wanted to touch on, and that is this idea of a merchant. The case mentions that Regal was acting as an agent for himself and the other owners of the horse. And the court didn't actually make a clear ruling on whether or not he qualified as a merchant under the UCC. So why is that important in the context of implied warranties?
Yeah, so that's a really good point, and it's something that's often overlooked in these cases. But the definition of merchant is actually really important because under the UCC, the implied warranty of merchantability only applies if the seller is a merchant.
Oh, okay.
So if you're buying something from a casual seller, like at a garage sale,
Okay.
you might not have any implied warranty protection at all.
Okay.
So the definition of merchant under the UCC is someone who deals in goods of that kind,
Okay.
or who holds themselves out as having knowledge or skill peculiar to the practices or goods involved in the transaction.
Okay, so someone who regularly deals with these kinds of goods or presents themselves as an expert.
Yeah, exactly. And in this case, the court didn't really dive into the question of whether Rigel met that definition.
Right.
So it's an interesting point to think about, was Rigel a merchant? Was he just a hobbyist like Sessa?
Right.
And if he wasn't a merchant, then would the implied warranty of merchantability even have applied in the first place?
Right. It's a good question, and I guess it just shows how important it is to consider all the different factors that can come into play in a UCC case.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, great. Now there's one final thing I wanted to discuss, and it has to do with proving when the defects actually happened. So obviously, Sessa's horse developed tendonitis and a blood clot shortly after he bought it. But the court seemed to suggest that Sessa didn't do a good enough job of proving that those problems existed before the horse was delivered to him.
Yeah.
Why was that such an important part of the case?
Right. So this goes to the burden of proof.
Okay.
So in a breach of warranty case, the buyer has the burden of proving that the goods were defective at the time of sale, or at least at the time of delivery.
Okay.
And in this case, the court said, there's a possibility that the tendonitis could have developed during transport.
Oh, okay.
Horses are delicate animals. They
Right.
get stressed out, they get injured.
Right.
And as for the blood clot,
Right.
the court said there wasn't really any conclusive evidence that that existed at the time of sale. It
Okay.
could have developed later.
Oh, okay.
So because Sessa couldn't prove that the defects existed at the time of sale or delivery,
Right.
he couldn't win his case.
Okay, so even if Regal had made an express warranty, or even if the implied warranty of merchantability had been breached, Sessa still would have lost because he couldn't prove that the defects were Regal's fault.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, that's really important. So it's not just about proving that the goods were defective, it's about proving that they were defective when they left the seller's possession. Okay, so as we wrap this up, what are some key takeaways from Sessa v. Regal that are really important for law students to understand?
Okay, well, I think there are a few. First of all, I know this case really highlights the importance of understanding the difference between an express warranty and an implied warranty.
Right.
An express warranty is something that's specifically stated,
Right.
while an implied warranty is something that's imposed by law,
Okay.
and the requirements for each are different.
Okay.
And this case also shows how important it is to pay attention to the details of the transaction.
Right.
Who's the seller? Are they a merchant?
Right.
What are the specific statements that they made?
Oh,
What were
yeah.
the buyer's expectations?
Right.
All of those things can be really important in a UCC case.
Okay, that makes sense. Anything else?
Yeah, and I think it's also really important to remember that the UCC is a body of law that's designed to facilitate commerce.
Okay.
So courts are going to be looking at these cases with an eye toward, what's going to promote fairness and efficiency in transactions.
Okay.
And so, they're not going to be quick to find that a warranty has been breached.
Okay.
Unless there's really clear evidence to support that.
Okay, so it sounds like the UCC is trying to strike a balance between protecting buyers and also ensuring that sellers aren't unfairly burdened.
Exactly, exactly.
Okay, great. Well, this has been a really fascinating deep dive into Sessa v. Regal. Thank you so much for walking us through it. I think this case is a really valuable learning tool for anyone who's interested in commercial law, especially the UCC. And it's also a great reminder that even cases that deal with seemingly niche topics like horse trading can have broad implications for how we understand the law of sales.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, that's all the time we have for today. Thanks for listening to The Deep Dive, and we'll see you next time.
See you then.
But before we go, I just wanted to leave you with one final thought. We've been talking about this case from 1977, but the world of commerce has changed a lot since then. Think about how the internet has transformed the way we buy and sell goods. We have these huge online marketplaces like eBay and Amazon where people are buying and selling all sorts of things, often without ever seeing the goods in person. So here's something to think about. How do the concepts of express warranties, implied warranties, and basis of the bargain apply in that context? When you're buying something online, what are you really relying on? Are you relying on the seller's description? Are you relying on photos or videos? Are you relying on reviews from other buyers? And how do courts determine whether a warranty has been breached in those situations? It's a really interesting area of the law that's still developing, and it's something that I think all of us, not just lawyers, should be thinking about. All right, that's it for real this time. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next time on The Deep Dive.
Bye, everyone.